car and a boat. Things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working. We're just not working anymore. They used to call us working class. We're just not working
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you in air by community-supported, listener-supported community radio station WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois. And we're webcasting live worldwide at WFT.org. And the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Gus with some underwriting announcements.
This hour program is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing the strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Gus. And speaking of Bill Faber, he was on the program last week, and I called him yesterday to find out how his city council race went, and unfortunately we played phone tag all day and I wasn't able to connect, so I'll find out about that soon. But even if he did lose, I definitely think he should try to run again sometime in the future.
By the way, Dave, speaking of Bill Faber being on this show,
mm-hmm.
that is on radioforall.net, is it not?
Yes, it is.
That is, folks. You can go to radio, numeral, or digit four, all.net, and you can find this Bill Faber interview and download it, along with many other East Illinois Labor Journal shows going back almost 20 years, Illinois Labor Hour shows, Illinois World Labor Hour shows, and the World Labor Hour shows.
Okay, very good. Yes, and speaking of which, Bill, this is our 20th anniversary. You and
Probably next fall.
More. Okay, but you and Peter Miller back in 1995, the one started this program because of the horrible media coverage, when there was media coverage, of the three simultaneous strikes and lockouts going on in Decatur, Illinois in the early 90s. And so this is our 20th anniversary. So and we're in pledge drive. This is not our favorite part of the year, but nevertheless, it's a necessary function we do have to do in order to keep the World Labor Hour on the air, as well as WFT as well on the air, because besides our program, there's a lot of other good community public affairs programs like Higher Ground with Carol and Aaron Ammons and Eunice Buck. There's also News from Neptune, which precedes our show, and many others. You won't find this on any corporate radio station, believe me. In addition to the public affairs programs, there's also all sorts of genres of music that you won't find on corporate radio. So this is a very important resource, a people's resource to support. And so if any way, I mean, you can help out in any way you can, whatever you can afford, please call 359-9338, or you can go to the website as well at WFT.org.
Oh, yeah, and I want to bring up something else, too. Yeah, sure. You can hear Outlaw Country on Sirius. Yeah, you can do the B.B. King, Lucille Blues thing on your cable TV, you know, your satellite TV. But can you listen to anything local?
Yes.
On those channels? That is something that you have to remember about WEFT and also other stations here, is that we are local.
And not only local, Bill, but like, for instance, the blues genre. There's all sorts of there's a blues circuit all over the country,
right.
You know, that you don't get, that's totally under the radar of corporate radio stations, is because these artists haven't signed big record deals yet, but yet they're out there touring, some of them for years, and they're great bands.
Yeah, but, and the thing is, if you listen to WEFT, you're going to be able to find out when those people are going to be here.
Indeed,
and
absolutely.
And you might hear them interviewed here in this studio.
And perform live.
Right, and you're not going to have that with the satellite or the cable
Indeed.
Services. Okay. And I think that's very important. And number two, that's incredibly important besides just what you hear on this station, is keeping this channel right-wing free.
And Christian.
Well, if you want to do a right-wing show on WFT, that's fine. But, I mean, we want to keep it so it doesn't turn into just another right-wing talk show station, or for that matter, left-wing just talk station. We'd like to avoid
that too. That would be unique.
Yeah, well, you know, there is moderate talk stations, we might say.
Whatever that is.
That have
yeah.
people like Tom Hartman and so on. But, you know, we want to keep this frequency. We don't want it to turn into another sports talk channel. I mean, like, turn on your radio at night. You know, you're driving in your car. And what do you get? Oh, you get a sports. You can always find a game somewhere. You get a preacher. You get some right-wing nut. The most recent stations that have come on in Central Illinois, an FM station in Decatur, right-wing, about third-tier talk.
Okay.
I mean, these people are just
gutter talk.
Never heard of them.
Okay.
And Stevie J station.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. you know, sports and conservative talk. Mm-hmm. We don't need any more of that. And that's probably what could happen if we lose this channel.
Indeed. Well, also just want to mention that we already have two pledges here, and I want to thank Stuart Levy for his generous gift, and also another pledge person who wants to remain anonymous. So, you know, we've got two so far. They called in right before the show, so please call 217-359-9338.
And I'll put my money where my mouth is. I'm filling one out right now. I want a T-shirt. $90.10. I suggest that you do the same thing.
Okay. But whatever you can afford would be appreciated. So, okay, Gus, so what's going on today with the Gus Wood Show here?
Well, got some great news stories going on. Of course, the big thing this week is the Rally for 15 across the country. On April 15th, low-wage workers in cities across the country are taking part in the Day of Action, the latest demonstrations in several years of organizing to demand $15 an hour and a union. The ongoing campaign led by groups like Fight for 15 and Fast Food Forward has not only exposed the terrible working conditions at some of America's most profitable companies, but it has thrust a $15 minimum wage and the right to form a union demands that would have been considered a pipe dream just a few years ago into the national discussion. We know that $15 an hour and a union is realistic, that we hear a lot of these fast food workers saying, and they know that these companies can't pay. And, you know, just giving an example of somebody of how these companies can pay, a recent comparison of Wall Street bonuses and the wages of workers making the federal minimum wage says it all. According to a report by Sarah Anderson for the Institute for Policy Studies, Wall Street banks awarded their employees with $28.5 billion in bonuses last year, up 3% over 2013. That's bonuses, mind you, on top of their six-figure salaries. So if you pulled the annual wages of all the more than 1 million people who work full time for the federal minimum wage, that would amount to about $14 billion, about half of what Wall Street parasites made in bonuses. So despite the fact that the Great Recession has been declared so-called over and most companies are back to making profits, most workers are still being forced to live like there isn't enough to go around. So you have wages actually decreasing even though profits are soaring at this point. So that's why I think that this big Fight for 15 is so huge going forward this week.
Indeed.
There's another thing going on too. Social Security.
Oh yeah.
All right. It's based on your wages. Okay. If you're making $7.25 an hour, you're not paying in anywhere as near as much as you would be if you're making $15.50 an hour. Okay. That's what I mean. I mean, that would double what you pay into Social Security. People are always worried about Social Security. There you go. Everybody needs a raise.
Mm-hmm. And also the people that make over $118,000 a year need to start paying in as well. That's right. The problem. But even despite that, Social Security is sound despite all the propaganda you hear. The only way that it's going to be compromised in any way, if funding is decreased, in other words, there's talk about that constantly. They're trying to privatize Social Security because Wall Street wants to get their hands on that huge trust fund. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is also a problem with state employees' pensions. I mean, this whole thing we've talked about this on the show, which basically I call it pension theft. Some people think that's too strong of words, but basically the state of Illinois, you know, borrowed against the money and now they don't want to pay it back and they're expecting the workers to pay it back. I mean, is that basically not show what's about, Gus?
Or? Exactly. Theft is actually too nice of a word. Okay. We're talking full on robbery, mm-hmm. armed robbery at that, because this is a police state. So armed robbery is what's going on here. And yeah, that's exactly what's happening with the state pension. We have to continue to fight really hard. I mean, we've seen what's happened in Detroit, and that's something that we're going to talk about in the future show in terms of what they're doing to their pension plans and things. I mean, it is literally becoming a war zone.
Indeed. And in addition to the people having their water turned off, basically trying to force the working class out of the inner city to make room for yuppie development, basically.
Exactly. And just moving forward in terms of that, they had this major breaking story coming out from the major national news records that that hiring now has gone up in the past 15 years. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the Great Recession is over, like I said in the last story. Well, according to that, that's actually wrong. In fact, we are now at a record number of African Americans specifically who are unemployed now. We are now at 12,202,000 who are actively seeking jobs and cannot find them. So this is a record, mind you. And as the participation rate for this group, declined over the month of 61%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You basically have a number of African Americans who are no longer seeking employment because they cannot actively find work. So in fact, let me read you this. According to the BLS, the more than 12 million black people not in the labor force in March means that they did not have a job or actively sought one for the past 4 weeks. The number climbed from 12,122,000 to 12,202,000. That's 80,000 people that were added to this statistic within a month span.
Oh my God.
So you can see now it's at the point where and between 16 and 19 years old, one out of four African American cannot find a job that's actively seeking one. So that's that 16 to 19 range where everybody claims are the youth who are getting involved in what they call criminal activity, which is a racialized way of saying black on black crime. But what you have happening is that jobs are being shut off from a major proportion of the African American community. 25%. Those are Great Depression numbers.
Oh, indeed, indeed. And, they say, you know, people that no longer are seeking work. I mean, what's really going on there? Basically, they're going into the underground economy, working for cash.
Exactly.
Or getting involved in the drug trade in order to survive. I mean,
the only way to feed.
And that's not just unique to African Americans. I mean, you're talking, you know, Latinos and poor whites as well, as well as Native Americans on the reservation. I mean, exactly. You've got these, pockets that I think Chris Hedges referred to around the country as sacrifice zones. Mm-hmm. He mentioned Camden, New Jersey, Immokalee, Florida, mm-hmm. Almost the entire state of West Virginia, mm-hmm. and he documented the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation out in South Dakota, where these places mm-hmm. he calls them sacrifice zones because. And Detroit's fallen into that one too, where basically the powers that be, the economic and political powers that be, are intentionally impoverishing the people there, and trying to drive their standards down to third world standards.
They're not sacrifice zones, they're sacrifice populations.
Indeed, indeed.
You know, I think that's the way it should be talked. You just say sacrifice zone. Well, it's too impersonal. Somewhere out in the desert or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point, Bill. Absolutely. So.
Sector 12.
Yeah.
All.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, this is that's a shocking statistic
and
there.
It's a historical trend too. Every mm-hmm. time whenever there's an unemployment drop or increase, it's always for African Americans double. Right now, the unemployment rate for all of America is 5.5%. Yet, we can always talk about how the wages are dropping, even though they're hiring in public sector, low skill, low wage, no benefit work. They're not going to bring that up in the CNN telecast.
Right.
But also the fact that the unemployment rate for African Americans is 10.4% versus
so double.
It's double. And mm-hmm. it's that's a historical trend going back all the way to the end of slavery in 1865. There's always a double. So whenever there's any type of economic stratification or deterioration, it affects African Americans, Latinos worse.
Yes.
And right now, the big forecast now across the news stations is that we're getting ready for another recession. Layoffs are starting up. The IMF just released a report saying that things were about to get really nasty within 2016, 2017. So of course, what groups are going to be affected the worst? And then, so you're going to have an increase of more police repression in terms of neoliberalization. I mean, all this stuff is just a process of how capitalism is really just tightening the throats of the minority groups in this country, and also the working the deteriorating white working class as well, who are now becoming the sub-working class.
Mm-hmm.
The working class might be gone by 2017 if we don't start continuing to fight around these types of things.
And like you mentioned, there's plenty of money out there. It's how it's allocated. Yeah. It's how it's being used. It's the priorities. This is not an act of nature, an act of God. These are calculated policies.
Exactly. And like Bill would be saying, like Rauner, Air Rauner.
Air Rauner, yeah.
Reich Fuhrer is Rauner.
Yeah, I mean, he's gonna bring out this haunting story and this scary story that there's no money in the budget. There is money there. There's always been money there. That is a false lie that Republicans are just throwing out there. There's no such thing as there's no money. It's just who's gonna get the money and who's gonna get the profits from the starting of the money.
We got a caller here. Let's see who it is. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
How y'all doing? This is Marty. I'm on the call. I'm trying to figure out how can we deal with the capitalism and how to call a nationwide strike without affecting employees. And my thought is, let's call a higher education strike all through America because they outsourced all the jobs and these kids are going to school to be employed. And when our companies are going and the place to put companies business.
Caller, I don't mean to cut you off, but you got a really strong echo there. I don't know where you're at or whatever. Is there any way you can move to another location? I take it you're on
the
cell phone.
Radio.
Yeah, maybe move away from the radio for a little bit and then repeat your statement, because our co-host Gus here just was able, he had a technical problem with his headphones. So if you could move away from your radio and make your statement again.
I'm saying that we could have a nationwide higher education strike for the people that's looking for employment when they get out of school, the people that's going through like the, I ain't going to say the trades, when I say the trade schools, like the IGTs and stuff, just have a whole nationwide strike and don't sign like the money over they get from the government, don't register school until they talk about bringing the jobs back to America so they can be employed.
Indeed. Yeah, and exactly.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And you know, the last time something like that happened, it caused actually a changing in the economic structure. It was called the General Strike of 1863 to 65, when the slave populations walked off the plantations and totally destroyed the production of the South during the Civil War. And that totally transformed the economic structure. And that was the last time a major national strike happened. So if we did that, it would totally drastically shift the economic sector in the country. So I agree with you 100%. But it's going to take us on the ground organizing different groups and locals and major cities to make that happen. But it is possible. And it starts with bringing power back to unions, and unions showing respect to all workers, regardless of race, class, gender, sexuality, whatever. Like, all workers need to be respected and organized by all unions, no matter what.
Okay, that was my comment for the day.
Great. Well, thank you so much for calling in. We'd love to hear, feedback from listeners.
Oh, yeah. Then there was the General Strike of 1877, which actually didn't happen with a lot of organization or anything. It was like a...
spontaneous, yeah.
It's like the way a lot of things work. There was one event that kicked it off and put it over the top. And the next thing you know, the unions are actually running the city of St. Louis.
Yeah,
and have
for a while.
Taken the government out. They ran it for a week before... vigilante deputies and troops came in
from the South. They pulled all the troops out of the South to suppress that strike, and then basically started the whole destroyed every good thing that came from Reconstruction and reimposed the old power relationships of the plantation class. Is that correct, Gus? Since you're the historian here,
started the Nadir period actually, which is the lowest point in African American history, where the political gangs, because you had biracial governments that were very successful in running the South and creating economic opportunities for African Americans and lower class whites, who for the first time actually had opportunities to go to school and to actually open businesses and things like that. But once those Northerners retreated and you have assassinations like the Vicksburg Massacre of 1876. So again, all these things happening. Yeah, I mean, what happened? The Nadir period just launched off, and we haven't had a resurgence of that type of power since, even though we've had pockets here and there, like Bill just talked about with the St. Louis issue, but it just, there's never been that coordinated effort anymore, and that was like a failed opportunity during Reconstruction.
Indeed.
Well, I mean, what happened there was just a wave of things, and there was more general strikes, and also in St. Louis. I mean, every major city pretty much in the United States had major labor disruptions, not maybe to the extent of St. Louis. And another thing, too, that was one of the things you talked about, pulling the troops out of the South. That's when they started building National Guard armories in the North, at least. And all those armories had gun ports in case the troops had to fall back to the armory because of the workers.
Okay,
but
that's
it never happened.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So what else is news, Gus?
Well, we got a lot. Like I said, there are a lot of things going on in the news recently.
Yeah.
Especially the big story, of course, coming out of the police brutality side of it is that the cop, Michael Slager, who was North Charleston, South Carolina officer who murdered Walter Scott, he became one of the first police officers in history to actually be indicted for murder, for killing an African-American individual. So that was interesting.
Did you see that video?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
The video now is...
That was a cold-blooded murder.
Yeah. I mean, as so was the Eric Garner one.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't see any difference between the Eric Garner case.
That's true.
Versus, and in fact, that was actually the way, you know, the choking, it was up close and personal, where this one was, you know, it was a little further away, but still the exact same thing.
Yes.
But the fact is that this is one of many. But here's something interesting about this. This could have been prevented. I just got a story today saying in 2013, Slager has a history of police brutality. Slager used the taser twice in 2013 on North Charleston resident Mario Givens, who witnesses said was neither belligerent nor resisting arrest. Givens had filed a complaint about the incident, but Slager was quickly cleared of wrongdoing by the internal police investigation. Here we go again with this internal police investigation. Now, everybody knows, and I'm very much heavy in favor of unions. I'm a unionist. I'm a union member. I love unions. I write union history into my academic work. But one of the things that we have to do, we have to make police unions take account for the things they've been doing in keeping police safe from jurisdiction and justice, because police unions are the number one group that are keeping cops from taking responsibility for these things. They tell them to be quiet. They tell them to they give them money to support them when these things happen. They protect them from justice, really, when they do these types of things. And it's a historical trend for them to do so. They've done it in Atlanta, they do it in St. Louis, they do it in Chicago. These police unions have to start stepping up to the plate and telling cops and calling them out when they do these types of things. Because I believe they really are the catalyst behind a lot of the police violence, because that they protect these police officers and they keep that foundational brotherhood of racism in the system.
Indeed. And plus they get backup from the judiciary, which of course we know in the last 30 years has been packed with right wing ideologues. Can you imagine if what the corporate media outcry would be if the teachers union were defending members who were pedophiles or physically assaulted their students in grade school, middle school, whatever? Oh my God.
Here's what I want to bring. It's a larger thing than that, and the teachers unions do seem to be different in this case. But that is in our system, which is an adversary system. We have what Sam Gompers called pure and simple unionism. You have your membership. You stand up for what you think is best for your membership. To hell with everybody else and everything else. Mm-hmm. Just like you have this stuff with the police. Here's something just as bad. My union, the laborers. Oh, yeah, let's build all these pipelines and everything. You know, it's just the prison guards unions, the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all types of business and employee associations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's because what we have, the theory behind the governance in the United States is called special interest liberalism.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's the theory, and it's not do the right thing, it's do your special interest.
Okay. Well, Gus, you've got a guest here in the studio, so if you've got another news story or whatever, maybe we should do that, take a quick music break, and then get to her, maybe, because I'm looking at the time here, and it's been a great discussion, but the clock's ticking here.
Yeah, I want to give more time to our special guests, one of my favorite, one of my union members in solidarity, so let's go ahead and go to a music break real quick.
All right, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on the listener supported community radio station WTN Champaign. And please, help us out here on Pledge Drive. Help keep us on the air. Call 217-359-9338 with your pledge. Any amount is appreciated. We'll be right back.
Eyes on the prize.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour. It's Ann Feeney, Rebuild America. And, anyway, we got some quick public service announcements, and, then Gus is going to go to a special guest here who's, live in the studio. State Representative Carol Ammons invites you to Constituent Night. That's every fourth Monday of the month from 5 to 7 p.m. at Representative Ammons Constituent Service Office at 407 East University Avenue in Champaign. And on the fourth Monday of each month, Representative Ammons will host extended office hours as a convenient way for busy working families to share their concerns or receive assistance with state issues. Come to share your thoughts on legislation, ask questions about state programs. For more information, you can contact Representative Ammons Constituent Service Office at 217-531-1660. That's 531-1660. Also, next Saturday is the State of Illinois Green Party Conference. It's Saturday, April 18th, with special guest Dr. Jill Stein, who is a 2012 Green Party U.S. presidential candidate. And that's right here in Urbana at the Independent Media Center, the downtown Urbana post office, 202 South Broadway in Urbana, just north of on the north side of Lincoln Square. And the conference will be having lunch and afternoon workshops and presentations from 12 noon to 5, as well as followed by an evening dinner social hour with a live Irish band. So that's next Saturday, April 18th, starting about noon. And again, that'll be the State Green Party Conference with Dr. Jill Stein. And also, come and find out what the third largest political party in the U.S. is all about and how it can make a difference in offering an alternative to our current one-party corporate state with two wings. Okay. Also, let's see here. Next Friday, April 17th, and Saturday, April 18th, Susan Parenti is actually having her play performed at the Prop Theater in Chicago at 8 p.m., and the title of the play is Two Lovers, Socialism and Capitalism, Three Acts. It's performed by local actors, actresses Brooke Celeste, a GEO member, as well as Elizabeth Adams, and it's directed by Stefan Bruhn, and that's at the Prop Theater, 3502 North Elston in Chicago, and that's next Friday and Saturday night. And if you want more details, you can go to designingasociety.net. And this Sunday and every Sunday, turn into Labor's Worldview TV from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6 and live at UrbanaPublicTelevision.org. Okay, so Gus, I guess...
I want to bring something
up. Yes, Bill.
Okay, mm-hmm. This isn't a local thing. However, if longtime listeners to the show might remember, we used to play a lot of Wayne Kramer.
Oh, yes.
And
MC5,
this kind of goes
yeah.
along. Also, today, too, is the book sale for Books for Prisoners.
Oh, yes, I forgot
okay.
about that. Thank
and,
you, Bill.
And this kind of goes along with that. Wayne Kramer, who actually did time in the 70s for selling cocaine after the MC5 broke up, he's got an organization called jailguitardoors.org. Okay, and I believe it's named after a Clash song.
Okay.
And apparently he was in Central Illinois lately because this morning a friend of mine on Facebook put up that she had dinner with Wayne and his wife last night.
Mm-hmm.
And she works at a prison in Lincoln, Illinois, where it's a women's prison, and she is the activities director. So apparently Wayne was there with this organization deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great thing. Something that I've really been sad about since probably about the 1970s is the total lack of any concern about all of these people that we have in prisons.
Yes.
And the total demonization of anybody that's in prison. And Jail Guitar Doors is a great organization. They raise funds to buy guitars, to give to prisoners. They promote to have people go to prisons and jails and teach people guitar. And I think it's a really good organization. Wayne Kramer is one of my favorite musicians. And this will inspire me to get out some of his CDs and edit them so that we can play them on the radio again.
Yeah, him and his band MC5 were quite actually revolutionary. I mean, in the sense of political revolutionaries back then. Their lyrics and their songs reflected it, and their activity outside of being musicians reflected it, too. So,
and by the way, also, their lead singer was Patti Smith's husband.
Ah, okay.
Fred Sonic Smith. And Wayne's solo career in the 90s, I mean, he's turned out some fantastic stuff back then, and I was really enjoying that. And I actually met Wayne in the alley behind the high dive one
okay
day.
That sounds very dramatic.
Yeah, he was loading into the bar.
Okay.
And
okay, very good. Okay, so I'll turn
jailguitardoors.org.
Okay, I'll turn it over to Gus now.
Okay,
We have a special guest in the studio today. Like I said, this is a member from our newest union on campus. We have Christina D'Angelo here from CFA Local 6546. So how's everything going, Christina?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm the grievance officer at the non-tenure track faculty local 6546, and just here to give you guys some updates, I guess.
Nice. Okay, so just for our listeners, can you give us a little background on CFA, like how you all formed? Because I know being there, it was a very strenuous fight. You know, the administration, you know, they literally tried to bury themselves in the dirt to keep you all from unionizing.
Of course,
as what they do. So
yeah. It's been you know, I've been involved for about a year, a little over a year, and. But the campaign has been going on for much longer than that. It started out of a joint effort from non-tenure track and tenure track faculty. We were certified in July as a sole unit that represents all non-tenure track faculty, including researchers, instructors, lecturers. We have a lot of different job titles that we represent. We did a card drive. That happened in the spring of last year of 2014. Mm-hmm. And so by doing a card drive, we got the majority of our members to sign off authorizing the formation of the union. So we are democratically formed and run by members. So all of the officers and activists are current members of the local. Now we're in our first contract bargaining to get a contract to defend and protect non-tenure track faculty here on campus. So that's where we are in our current state of affairs.
Wow. Yeah. So already the fight to actually build the union, and then you have to go right into another fight to bargain the contract with that.
It's a lot of upward battles for sure. You finish the card drive that, you know, going all over campus, trying to find all of our members, get feedback and, get people involved. You submit the papers. The labor board says yes. The union or the university rejects the labor board's, certification.
Historically.
The attorney general again says yes. The university rejects that. The appellate court says yes. The university rejects that. And so now we're back up. The university has filed with the state Supreme Court to reject our certification. But we're moving forward and we're still in bargaining, and we are going to try our best to secure a just and fair and respectful and responsible contract for our members. So we just have to keep moving forward.
Yeah, it's going to, and again, I can't stress this enough how important it is for the other campus unions to really rally around this, because what the victories and the successes that happen for CFA are also victory successes for GEO, also for SEIU, for all these different other groups, because we have to really build off of each other's successes and victories.
Absolutely.
Because like I said, one of the things I'm very big on is revolution being infectious. You know, victories
Absolutely.
And successes are infectious. When something pops off somewhere, it pops off somewhere else as well. So yeah, that's why we really continue to support each other in the same issue. We're having these similar issues as well, as we're about to go into arbitration for two separate cases in August because of what the administration is doing in terms of basically just calling us deficient and not coming to the table with us. I mean, all types of mess. And then because they think that we're not actually going to take them to that particular point where we've been very adamant in saying that we are going to be respectful and we are going to rally around everybody's causes on the campus, if they're just members or if they're members of other unions as well. So, you know,
and the more we all rally together and take the university to task on these issues, you can see that the strategies are very similar. The administration's tactics are very similar. And what we want as workers and as members of the academic community are all very similar. You know, we are all standing up for education, for public education in the state of Illinois, in the state of the country that it is right now. And, you know, graduate employees and adjuncts and tenure track and non-tenure track faculty and clerical staff and building maintenance. Like, we all are here supporting the same institution, and we want to see that continue to be a progressive space, exactly. I think.
Yeah.
So just think of what would happen if everyone didn't show up one day for work. I mean, everyone from the adjuncts, the graduate assistants, the building service workers, food service. I mean, man, can you imagine?
A general strike on the campus of the University of Illinois would be historic. They will literally write books.
I mean, just one day. Just think about what that would do.
All it would take is one day, and the entire city will Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy would literally be in crisis. They would be in crisis mode.
Well, I think a lot of it really is also about visibility. Before our campaign and before our certification, I think a lot of our students didn't know what a non-tenure track faculty member was. And I was an officer and a graduate student. I was an officer in GEO myself also. I came here as a grad student. And I think the same was the case before the 2009 strike. You know, students don't understand always what is happening to the people that are in the classroom with them. And I think the more visibility that we have and the more solidarity we show to one another, the more likelihood that we have to have a voice on what is shaping our campus.
That's true.
I think it's really important.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So let's go ahead and move to the insane elephant in the room, Bruce Rauner. You know, just the fact that this specter is haunting Illinois for at least the next four years, you know, the specter, you know, like the specter over Illinois haunting and trying to dismantle any logical sense to the economic sector. How does CFA Local, 6546 feel? Well, I know how you feel about Rauner, but in terms of your organizing strategy and going forward with bargaining, how do you feel as though Rauner's policies or what he proposes in his policies are going to affect you moving forward?
I think from the beginning, our strategy and our philosophy has been really based on democratic processes and transparency. And those are things that we are fighting for here on campus and that we want for our members. We want to have a voice in how funds are allocated and who gets to make decisions and who's at the table if there are going to be budget cuts and things like that. And I think the same strategy as how we're approaching how to deal with Rauner and what is coming down the pipeline in terms of funding for public education. I think, one, we plan on getting together with as many campus and statewide coalitions as we can to support funding of public education, but also to do the research and do the groundwork to make sure that everyone understands exactly how much money is on the table, exactly how much funding there is, and that it gets distributed in an appropriate way that really represents the interests of Illinois people. I think on campus that's always been our strategy and our point of view, that there is money here. There is enough to do the things that we want to do and to support education and to support our students and our educators and our researchers. We want that to be where money goes versus going to administrative costs that are increasing at an exponential rate. And we have more and more non-tenure track faculty precisely because of that, you know, to cut costs. We have more adjuncts, more non-tenure track positions, more graduate employees becoming hourlies, things like that. Because the funds are not being allocated in a way that supports education. So I think here on campus and at the state level, we're definitely going to fight for maintaining funds and also a transparency of how much money there actually is in the budget and where that money is going.
And just to kind of give a glimpse of how this works really, or the issues, we can't even get the university to go into inner city schools in Chicago and Atlanta to recruit for both undergraduate and graduate level students. But they will pay millions and millions to go across oceans to grab students, where they won't even go 2 hours into the inner cities to get African American students and Latino students who really want to come to the university. And they just won't do it, you know. So again, that goes to the idea of allocation and the motivation behind a lot of this money, you know, these resources and things like that. I mean, it's incredibly disturbing, a lot of these trends, and the numbers are getting worse. And it's in the same aspect of the non-tenure track faculty as well.
Absolutely.
This stuff is at every level, going from students all the way to the faculty members.
Mm-hmm. And the strategy, yeah, at the undergrad level, to search for and to promote more students coming from backgrounds that can pay higher and higher tuitions, getting graduate students to provide more and more services that are lower paid, the same for non-tenure track faculty, and tenure track faculty continues to decrease. Mm-hmm. You know, positions aren't getting filled. It's all connected. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So besides bargaining and besides the administration, what do you think has been the biggest difficulty in organizing for these contract negotiations, you know?
Well, our biggest challenge might be that we are a very spread out group of individuals. So non-tenure tracks are all over campus. Some are not on campus. You know, we have members that are out of the country. We have members that are in Chicago. And we're about 500 members. Sometimes it's just reaching our members and making sure that we know what is happening on their block, you know, what's happening in their unit, what's happening in their lab. And it's really one of our fundamental founding pillars, is to make sure that we are representing our entire bargaining unit as best as we can. So I think really finding a way to unite non-tenure track faculty and remind our members that despite our differences, that we do have some fundamental similarities. We're all workers. We're all educators in some fashion or other. You know, we have researchers and teachers. We work for a public university, and we choose to work for a public university. You know, we have people in finance that could be in the financial sector if they wish to, but they decide to be here because they want to be educators and they want to be part of this community. We have, you know, other members that could be any number of places, but they choose to be here, and we face a lot of the same issues, you know. I guess that's the biggest challenge, is trying to find a common ground and remind our members that we have a common ground, and then actually reach our members.
That's all, you know, that's one of the biggest historical trends of unions and organizing in general, is density plays a major role in how solidarity moves forward or progresses. Because like you say, you have to get those members who don't necessarily identify with some of the bigger objectives of the union because of where they are in terms of geographic space or perspective or things like that, you know. So that's kind of the issue in terms of solidarity and moving forward with that, is getting all members on board for the same objectives. So,
right, exactly. Yeah. And to remind, you know, those members that maybe haven't gotten involved yet, that have heard about what we're doing but don't really know where their place is to remind everybody in this community and in our community that the union didn't do this to us. You know, I'm a member, I'm a non-tenure track instructor, and I am an officer, and I'm part of the running everyday management of the union. You know, the union didn't drop down on us. We made a democratic decision to form our union. And so, I think it's a big misconception that it was, you know, some big brother union dropped in and made this decision for us, and now we have to try and bargain a contract with what we have. But that's not what happened. We organized as faculty on campus and decided we wanted a voice and we wanted to be represented and we wanted to work together to solve these problems versus trying to fight through this system on our own. And the union is here for us. You know, I am the union. I'm here for our members. I'm a grievance officer. I want our members to know that they can reach me at any time if they have issues in their workplace. Our president, our bargaining chair, all of the people that are working every day in addition to our jobs are doing this because we believe that it's right and because we want to form a community. So that's what I really, you know, for those members that, that haven't really gotten in the loop yet, that's what I want to make sure they know, that we're here and we are them, you know. Yes. We're not some other entity coming in and trying to dictate what happens. We get to make the choices.
In other words, you didn't mobilize, you organized.
Yes.
And that's my big, and that's one of the biggest things that I emphasize in the work that I do is autonomy, organizing yourselves and not internally, not external forces coming in to mobilize and trying to make decisions for you. Because, you know, that's always the biggest issue in how social movements collapse is external mobilization. They come in, they make assumptions and predictions about what the group needs instead of letting the group create things themselves, become the subjects of their own narrative.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what CFA did when you all formed. And I think it's one of the greatest things about your local. So I really appreciate you coming on today. And are there any parting words or any events that are coming up that we need
upcoming,
to get ready for?
I think, you know, ending the semester, we've got a lot of things on the books, but for sure we're going to plan something for May Day that we hope to do with a lot of folks on campus and in the community at large to support labor in Champaign-Urbana. So keep in tune for that. I'm not sure exactly what it's going to be, but definitely something's happening on May Day.
And May Day is on Friday this year, I believe.
Yes,
it is. That'd be a great day to just take off work.
It is.
By the way, I was just wondering how much other media in this area have given you the opportunity to address these issues in such detail and at such length.
Well, we have gotten some interest from local media. I know that our bargaining chair and our president have talked to Daily Illini and the News Gazette, but we're definitely interested in being in spaces like this that are labor-minded, that are going to ask the questions that we want to answer.
Okay, we'd like to have you.
Help keep WEFT on the air and keep this channel where there is the opportunity to have such programming by calling now and making a pledge. And besides that, I do have a pledge here. And it's from Nick Koch,
Hi, working Nick.
Member of IBEW Local 601 and a personal friend of us.
Electrician Union,
Right, he's an union electrician working in construction. And he's pledged $90.10 today, but he has a $100 challenge.
Oh, okay.
And I guess if somebody can figure this out sometime over the next couple of weeks, he will donate another $100 if somebody can tell him the last date that the News Gazette published a half page or more of labor news.
Oh, wow.
More or less like
that's a challenge.
Labor section.
Okay.
Okay. Wow. And, anyway, the hosts of this show and our families are not eligible.
Okay.
But anybody else can call
this
in
great.
And
okay.
He'll donate an extra $100.
Okay. And, you know, we'd love to have you back in June. Would that be a good time to get you back? I mean, you'd have some updates for us then?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
If not me, then definitely someone else.
No,
that
we want
we're working
you back
with.
Because we want to talk about the topic we were talking about before the show.
Okay.
We'll have you on primarily for that, but that'd be a great opportunity to give us some updates.
Yeah, I'd love to come back. At the end of the semester, we'll have a lot of news.
Hopefully
there'll be some movement in the bargaining room that we can share. That's what we really, really want to see, and hopefully the university will start working with us in a more progressive way. I'm a terrible optimist, so we'll see.
You have more optimism than I do in terms of how administration, how capitalists work.
If that's not the case, then in June we can make some plans, right?
Exactly.
We can all talk about what we can all do together.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. You picked a wonderful guest today.
Yeah,
yes,
amazing.
Real quick before you play the CD.
Yes.
I have 30 seconds of Rand Paul explaining how things work.
Okay.
And by the way, folks, Rand Paul announced for president. It's going to be an interesting season. Are you ready?
Yep. Auxiliary's on.
Okay.
There are no rich. There are no middle class. There are no poor. We all are interconnected in the economy. You remember a few years ago when they tried to tax the yachts? That didn't work. You know, they lost their jobs. The people making the boats, the guys making $50,000 and $60,000 a year, lost their jobs.
We all either work for rich people or we sell stuff to rich people. So just punishing rich people is as bad for the economy as punishing anyone. Let's not punish anyone. Let's keep taxes low and let's cut spending.
Okay. So, Bill, what your comment on that?
Hey. It's all for the rich people. Okay.
Well, I think this next song
that's by what our whole society is about.
Okay, I think this next song by Public Enemy that was a great lead into this next song, Things That Make You Blind. So you've been listening to the World Labor Hour on listener supported community station WFT. And what are you waiting for? This is the hour's almost done. So pledge now. We'll be happy to take your pledge. Any amount's great at 217-359-9338. And until next week, be safe and power to the people. Take care.
Superman is back as your hero. Hear ye, hear yo. America, the beautiful, beautiful, the plentiful. Now looking sort of pitiful. A third of the world at war. Wait a minute, gotta take care of that rock if y'all wanna live in it. Medicine and Medicare, cause they don't care. Your favorite millionaire is in the air. See him everywhere, but they ain't there. So rally and protest, cause the world in fear. Now people, people, can we take it to the square? Jesus cost me a dollar at the floor of Creflo. Like how the hell he's supposed to know I see the ass in the name of a lie running to the radio. In the TV issues and views shaped by one-sided news. Guys like Planet of the Apes on the CDs and tapes. Reach me, young cats asking old heads teach me. Yeah, Ab, I'm a beast that reached me. Radiation of a radio, TV, movie nation on your goddamn mind. Makes you blind. You don't matter and they don't mind. Cause these be the things that make you blind. I say, you don't matter. And they don't mind, cause these be the things that make you blind.
For more information about the show, go to theunionedge.com.
Hello, I'm Mark Belanger from Radio Labor, reporting for The Union Edge. In the United States, results by the prestigious polling company Gallup show that more than half of the population, 53%, approve of unions. Yet, union density in the country, the number of workers in a union, has been declining dramatically. In 1983, union density in the U.S. was 20%. That's now been cut in half. It's now 11%. In the private sector, the rate of unionization has fallen to 7%.